Hello and welcome to Getting Goosebumps, the weekly podcast exploring the business of storytelling, where I interview many of the world's greatest marketers and storytellers to share their insights and ideas of how to put emotion into marketing. Hello and welcome to another episode of Getting Goosebumps. I'm your host, Brian Adams, and this week is a very special episode indeed because I'm joined by the host of another podcast called The Power of Story. And I'm really excited, actually, because Park Howell, the host and guest on this show, is talking to me today, and our conversation is going out on both podcasts simultaneously as an episode on each. So it really is an interesting show, and especially because Park's podcast, The Power of Story, was part of the inspiration for me starting Getting Goosebumps. So we've all got Park to thank. A little bit more about Park. He's a blogger, storyteller, an award-winning entrepreneur and CEO of Park & Co. His talks and workshops have inspired hundreds, if not thousands, of people to harness the power of storytelling in their business and discover their own brand story. Park tells us how figuring out your story is just like quitting smoking. Admitting there's a problem is the first step to recovery. Once you do the hard work and get under the skin of your customer, Park says it can be simple to work out what your story needs to be. So why are so many brands still getting it wrong? Park sheds some light on that. We also talk about the three most common types of customers he comes across and where they typically are on the road to accepting that storytelling is the way to go forward. Park has taught so many people how to discover and share their own story, and in this episode, he shares his top three tips for creating your story. So find out exactly what they are. Let's get into the show.
Okay, it says we're being recorded. I'll go ahead and mute myself, and you guys are good to go.
Great.
Hey, Brian. Park here.
It's good to talk to you, Park. It really is. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. This is very cool because it's the first time I have done a simulcast podcast, if you could even do that, because I know they're going to be airing at different times, but I'm so excited to have you on our show, Business of Story, and I'm so excited to be on your show, giving you goosebumps.
Well, I am getting goosebumps as we speak, Park. I've never done this either, but I'm really excited. And I've never actually heard of anyone throwing out one episode on two podcasts, so maybe, do you think this is a first?
I think it's going to be fun. You know, I started our podcast, Business of Story, July 1, and I can't believe how quickly our tribe around this has grown, and you are one of them, and it's so great to meet you. We haven't met in person. I know you're in LA right now, but you hail out of London with an agency in London and Liverpool, and you've been doing this business of storytelling podcast a little bit longer than I have. What is the background with you and your agency?
Well, you know, Park, We've been a digital agency for about 12 years, and just like any other digital agency, I guess, really, what we've noticed in the UK and Europe, working with our clients, is more and more, more brands are focusing on the tactics of digital marketing, and we found a real fundamental need to go back to basics and work out what's the story, what is the message, who is the audience, who are we catering for, you know, and I've had a passion for storytelling for many years, and you know, it's like two worlds collide where I get to work on the passion and give value to the customers. You know, it's been a really interesting journey. But you know, finding your podcast, I absolutely love your work, and
thank you.
You're going to start to go weekly soon. Is that right?
We are now, yeah. In October, the sponsors have been loving it. The listeners have been loving it. So we, I guess we distribute every Wednesday now. Yeah, and it's great because it opens it up to a lot more guests on the show. And I've got a list like you do, I'm sure, as long as your arm, of guests that want to talk about storytelling, content marketing, digital media, sustainability, whatever it takes to move, you know, the mission forward.
Yeah, well, It's good to hear because I've been listening to your podcast, and you know, every 2 weeks it just wasn't enough because I was, you know, some of the guests you've had, absolutely fascinating, you know, and I think we come at it from slightly different angles. Would you agree with that, Paul?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, mine is very much coming at it from the story artist approach, and what I've, over the last 7-8 years, I've been doing a lot of studying in Hollywood and with screenwriters and authors about what do they know that makes a really great story that we in the marketing world and those, you know, that whose job is persuasion should be using. So what I try to do is find that intersection of the story artist and the marketer, brand strategist, content marketer, sustainability executive, anybody that needs to be way more persuasive to move people forward faster. What is the bewitchery of story? How does it work, and how can we apply it? Just as if we were trying to sell a screenplay. But our sweat and tears goes into creating that perfect tweet, that blog post, that infographic. But it's all the same principles we're finding. So that's what we do. We try to connect the story artist with the marketer out there so that we can understand their worlds. And in contrast, I've been listening to your podcast, and you've had some really amazing guests marketer-wise with a very much of a focus on storytelling. I listened to Seth Godin today. And by the way, I love your story about how you got him on your podcast. I hope you can share that with our audience. But I thought he was fantastic. And Teddy Rubin the other day I was listening to, he gave out his phone number, and I called him. I called him 3 days ago. I haven't heard back from him yet, so we'll see if he's true to his word.
Yeah, I'm sure you will do. You know, but, he tells that story of he gave his phone number out on stage, didn't he? You know, and he had to call 300 people in 4 days. So it's a dangerous game. Mm-hmm. But it's just brilliant to speak to so many people who recognize the power of story, and it's almost a grassroots. It's the essence of marketing, and I think it's been overlooked, you know, certainly on this side of the pond, which is why, you know, we're starting to focus on it. So in a couple of weeks, I'm meeting Robert McKee, and I first heard of his work on your show, an absolute godfather of story in Hollywood. I love your angle, looking at how Hollywood have been telling great stories and how that's bringing it into the business world. So I've got to thank you for that, Park. I can't wait for to meet Robert McKee in a couple of weeks. You've also spoken to Jonas Sachs. He articulates a great brand story and how it maps to Hollywood really well. I mean, you must have found it so fascinating speaking to him as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. He wrote Winning the Story Wars, and those who tell and live the best stories will, I think, rule the world is what it is. And his is very much focused on sustainability and environmental work. He's done some really great work in that area. But actually, my exploration into Hollywood started even before that, and this is when my listeners know this quite well. Our middle son went to film school, and I said, hey, since we're buying the textbooks, send them to me when you're done. I want to know what Hollywood knows. And, of course, learn of Joseph Campbell and the hero's journey there. But one of the other books that was really fantastic was Blake Snyder's Save the Cat. And it is about taking the hero's journey and molding it into the family genre. And he sold more screenplays to Disney in the 1980s than anyone else. And I really connected with that and have used that in a number of different projects, from events to TV spots to radio and so forth. And then when Jonah's book came out, I saw kind of that marriage of it even evolving more into advertising marketing world.
It's just so fascinating and interesting. But some of the guests I've approached to talk about this aren't necessarily known first and foremost for storytelling. However, when you look at the work and the success and the traction they get online with their audience, quite quickly it's very easy to agree that it's because they're great storytellers. So I've been fascinated to talk to a whole host of people, but very quickly it's a sort of centrifugal point where the art of story, it's definitely been lost. You know, I mean, do you find it in marketing with your clients or the brands that you see, is that the missing piece, and that's why it seems to be in vogue right now?
No, I think it's in vogue right now because all of us agencies who truly are professional storytellers and we're supposed to do that have permission to be storytellers. But I think the challenge is too many agencies are trying to use that as a differentiator. And it's so ubiquitous in what we all do. It's not a differentiator as an agency goes. But what I think you guys do over at PH Creative that we do here at Park & Co. as well is we really educate our clients on how to become storytellers themselves and give them permission. And I do a workshop, the Business of Story workshop, where I show these folks that they are at the tops of their storytelling games in kindergarten. And it's just been coached and educated and MBA'd out of them. Yet that storyteller still sits within them and wants to be released to the world. So I just show them this very intentional approach to storytelling that they can apply to their leadership, to their employee engagement, PowerPoints, and actually put power and have points in their presentations that make points.
That's brilliant. I mean, we do something similar, and usually magic happens in those workshops where the penny drops and light bulbs go on, and they see, oh, God, you know, if we can tell an effective story to our audience, but not just the whole audience, breaking it down into what we call personas, we can really reach the audience and get a hell of a lot more traction. Now, a really interesting thing we do is we look at the different context of an audience, so telling different types of stories to get a different type of response depending on where they are in the marketing and sales cycle. Do you do something similar, Park?
Yeah, that's so smart because you have to put the audience, your customer, at the center of the story. And in doing that, you have to understand the story that they're living, or at least the story they are telling themselves about your brand. And that story is going to completely change from first awareness, who are these people, and what's the story I'm initially going to tell myself, to that first purchase and interaction with your product or service. That journey then expands, and now they've got a whole new perception of you and your brand, and that story will evolve with that perception. And the brand needs to be there along the way to make sure that they're, A, delivering on the story promises that they're making, and, B, that they're making sure that their customer is having the proper story in their own minds about what's happening. And of course, the whole goal is to build brand ritual, or to continue that franchise. Hollywood knows this better than anybody else. I think they're just about ready to roll out the 24th episode of a franchise of the James Bond movie. You know, they can keep changing the main character, but they know their audience so well in a godlike way that McKee talks about in screenwriting. And brands need to do that. And the one thing we found with our story cycle process is they apply it not only to themselves as the brand, as the business leader within the brand, they apply the exact same process to understanding their brand story, and then they apply the exact same process to understanding their customer story. Once you have those three stories side by side, you then weave them together to try to understand where are the gaps in the story that we're telling and living and what the customer thinks and believes, where are we not delivering where we need to be, and how do we fill in those gaps, and even more importantly, how do we take advantage of the opportunities that we see created when we weave these three stories together. That's how we go about it.
Yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it? But once you do that tough work, and it is tough work because it's not easy, to get all of those ducks in a row, as we say. Once you do that and you really get under the skin and understand your audience and your customer, it does become fairly simple to work out what those stories need to be. But there's so many brands out there just getting it wrong, isn't it? Do you think there's still an element of mindset of we broadcast a story one way rather than listening and engaging?
Yeah, I would say we broadcast the story from our brand's perspective, the brand does, without taking in, a lot of consideration for the audience. I think the other thing is a lot of brands are fearful of telling that quote-unquote authentic story, and they don't turn their agencies loose to let them really do what they do best. I put out a blog post today. Every Friday I do the 5 best stories on business story from the week that I've come across. And there's one in there from Canva, the new design app. And it's 71 of the best visually storytelling printouts. I don't have the headline right in my head, but anyways, suffice it to say they cover 71 unbelievable ads when you look at them. And it's a beautiful visual, quite often just a logo, and it completes this amazing story, and it brings the customer, the reader, consumer along with the ride. And my creative director and I were just heading over to a logo presentation earlier today, and I was mentioning that article to him, and I said, these are beautiful ads, and they look great in blog posts and in design annuals, but how come we never see them anywhere in real life? And he said, yeah, it's like this ad theater that is a unicorn. We all love it. We all aspire to do it, and we see it in these awards journals, but nobody has the clients with the guts to actually do it. And to me, it's fabulous storytelling, but I think to answer your question, Brian, it says that clients so often are fearful of telling a story that really gets the attention they're looking for.
Yeah, we ask our clients how brave you are. How brave are you?
That's a great question.
You know, it's definitely, we're in a fortunate position now where we know who our good customer is. You know, we know who we want to work with, and that is our first test. And it's so frustrating for a team when you come up with a great, authentic story and the client either isn't brave enough to put it out there or dilutes it till it loses its magic. It's painful. But I think for the first time, Park, we're definitely seeing more internal communication with brands. So the marketing departments are actually talking to HR and actually talking to customer service. Mm. And for me, that's the only way you can get a real authentic story across a brand. And it also negates the need to synthetically create stories in the marketing department, you know, that is trying to get across a point or explain the value of a brand. Mm-hmm. When there's so much magic usually within an organization, you know, how do you go about pulling those stories out of a company that already there? Do you do a lot of that, just articulating things that have already happened and stories that other departments have?
Yeah, what we find works very, very well is when we are asked to come in on an engagement, we just get the client to get to the real root of the problem, and what they will always say is, we just don't have our brand story straight. And as soon as they admit to what the problem is, it's like quitting smoking. That's the first step to fixing it. If they will not admit that, if they're hemming and hawing and no, we think it's okay and blah, 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 then there's no reason for us to be in the room with it. You know, we are there really as story doctors to help them with that brand messaging, but they have to admit that there's a problem, and really it's not that hard to get to. And sometimes you also have to bring that chief marketing officer along and say, it's okay, it's not your fault. You are trying to herd cats in the brand story world. We're going to help bring you the cavalry in, or the pen in, and bring this all together so that you are all speaking from the same page. That's pretty much how we go about it. Brian, so we've been talking about my podcast, and I appreciate that. I want to know, you've been in this business for quite a while. What got you really involved in storytelling? Why did you follow that path? You've got a terrific book out called Getting Goosebumps, mm-hmm. and that's all led to your podcast. Can you kind of bring that whole story together for us?
Yeah, sure. I started the agency, and there was always a big vision. I always decided, right, I'm gonna build an agency, I'm gonna sell it for lots of money, and I'm gonna make a movie.
Perfect.
And it was just a pipe dream, if I'm really honest. It's just a passion, a labor of love, something I do in my spare time. You know, I do some writing, and I just love film, and I love story. But over the years, I saw these two worlds collide, and I got really, really excited. As content marketing has sort of moved to the fore, you know, with social media, I saw the real need for brands to go back to the basics of storytelling. And from an inbound marketing perspective, getting that right is essential. You know, and I was seeing a trend of going into our clients and just having to go through the same process time and time again, where we really break down, starting with brand values, looking at business objectives, then going through strategy, tactics, implementation, and having to put all this together in that way, because lots of our clients were just jumping straight into the tactics and not getting any traction, no matter how much content they were producing. So the inspiration for the book really was to educate my customers first. And we've been overwhelmed by the response we've had by getting it out there.
And then how did that kind of give you the impetus for the podcast, or is it vice versa? Which was first?
Well, the book came first, and in the book we look at who are some of the best storytellers. Obviously, we looked at Hollywood, and one of my favorite books as well is Save the Cat, by the way. It's absolutely incredible. So looking at that framework, we looked at comedians and even great political leaders, just to find, you know, what's the essence of their magic. And also, many years ago, I had a fear of public speaking, an absolute terror. I was terrified to the point where it was affecting my business. So rather than go on presentation skills training, I did a stand-up comedy course, and nice. It was the most terrifying 6 weeks of my life. I actually lost a stone and a half in weight through sheer terror.
Then wait. Did you say a stone and a half in weight?
Yeah.
For us Americans, what in the world does that mean?
That's about, I'm going to get this wrong, I think, now, but it's probably about, I'll have to Google it. let me Google this real quick. Pounds.
A stone and a half of pounds. So I'm figuring a stone must be about 20 pounds, and they used it to hold up a fence post for the dairy cattle out in the Shire somewhere, or am I in the wrong country at this point?
It's
got to be a story to us to that.
10 kilograms. 10 kilos.
Okay.
So that's a lot of weight in 6 weeks when you're not trying to lose weight.
Right.
Stress and terror. But I had to write 15 minutes of my own material. I was being coached on delivery and timing, and the content, and then to graduate from this horrendous experience, I had to perform 15 minutes of my own material to a paying audience of 300 strangers at a comedy festival, which was just terrifying. But it was life-changing as well, and that stuck with me. So some of the stuff I was taught in that 6 weeks is in the book, and also I guess that was part of the inspiration for just looking at, you know, who are the best storytellers in the world. And who else can we learn from outside of marketing? You know, mm-hmm. and that put me on a very, very interesting path. So, you know, that kind of sort of reminded me of that while I was writing the book. I just decided to keep that going and speak to, you know, the best storytellers in the world. And that's what I've been doing with the podcast.
It's great fun. When did you launch your podcast?
It's been going now for, it's only 3 months.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, so it's
still about the same time. So this simultaneous podcast is part of a simultaneous launch of two different podcasts about storytelling and business that never knew each other. Is that the universe working? Designed serendipity, I think they call that.
Yeah, I think planets are aligning, Park, absolutely.
So I want to hear the story. You shared it with me, if you're comfortable sharing it with the audience. I loved how you tracked down Seth Godin, and I think it's so smart, a little personal touch. Would you mind sharing that story with the gang? Because you have some amazing, amazing people on your podcast, and I need to borrow some of these tactics on my own so I can, you know, bring more quality like that.
Yeah, sure. And I guess if there's any remote chance that Seth Godin's listening to this, I really do. The first thing is, it's absolute sincere. My approach, I really meant this. And it started out reaching out to Seth Godin. He was top of my list in terms of marketing. I would say he is literally a marketing god. Definitely the first marketing book I ever read was Purple Cow. So I've held this guy in high esteem, just like the rest of the world, for a very long time. So I decided, after I got the courage up to try and just reach out, first email started with the subject line, "This feels like emailing God." And then I wrote, "Dear Mr. Godin, I guess you get contacted all the time. People ask you for things. I want to start a relationship by giving you something first. What can I do for you? What would you like me to send you from the UK to the US to put a smile on your face, add some value?" And he came back fairly quickly, which which surprised me, I've got to say, with a very polite way of brushing me off and saying, look, I'm in a good place right now. I don't need anything. I really appreciate it, but I haven't got the time to keep up any correspondence. So, kind regards, take care, Seth. So mm-hmm. I was like, oh, what do I do now? So I emailed them back quickly and said, well, I appreciate that, Seth, but I'm going to send you something anyway. And I had no idea what I was going to send him, but now I'm in dialogue with Seth Godin. And I had a gift sent from a friend from who's living in Japan. And there, staring right back at me, was two toy cars. Weirdest packaging from Japan, as you can imagine. And one of them was a really small toy truck with a giant hamburger on the back. It's just the oddest thing. So I decided to send this to Seth Godin with a handwritten note that said, Dear Seth, a friend of mine sent this to me. It put a smile on my face. Hopefully it's put a smile on your face. And again, about 9 days went by because it had to be shipped over from UK to the US. But he came back with just a one-liner. Brian, thanks for the little truck. Keep making your ruckus. Kind regards, Seth. So I was like, cool, okay, got it. He's answered me back. I'm still in an email dialogue with Seth Godin. This is incredible. But what on earth do I do now? So I got I literally just didn't have the courage, really. I was literally scared to email him back and ask for something. But a few days went by and I thought, screw it. I'm just going to send him an email. What's the worst that can happen?
Reasonable, yeah.
Yeah, so because he put on the email, keep making your ruckus, I thought, right, here we go. So, Dear Seth, I've found my ruckus. My ruckus is interviewing the world's best marketers and storytellers. Would you consider being on my podcast? Now, everyone I've reached out to this point, they usually come back and they say, yeah, absolutely, that's great. Let's set something up for 2 months' time. Not Seth. He comes back and says, sure, how's tomorrow morning? And I was like, oh, my God. So I stayed up all night. I read his books again. And, that was it. It happened just like that. It was incredible. But afterwards, the lesson from me, because I asked him, like, how many of these do you do? He said, about 8 a year. I said, how many times do you get asked? He said, Brian, I get asked 3 times a day, every day, without fail, even Christmas, all holidays. I was like, oh, my God, that's incredible. But, you know, what I learned from it is the number one reason people don't interview Seth Godin is they haven't got the courage to ask. Mm-hmm. You know? And one thing I've learned by doing this, I don't know whether you sort of share this, Park, is people are generally really nice. You know, mm-hmm. If you reach out to them, you might have to do a little bit of work, but people are generally really nice. But I think starting off by trying to give Seth Godin some value first was probably, in retrospect, the smart thing to do. And do you know what? I genuinely meant that. It wasn't about the end game of getting him on the show. I wanted to reach out and, you know, give him some value first. So I don't know where the lesson is in that, but that's how it happened.
Well, it's beautiful, and because you were authentic about it, and I know he kind of made fun of that word authentic on the podcast. And by the way, folks, listen to the podcast over at Getting Goosebumps because it's really good. I think he even closed with the ruckus line, so that must be kind of his mantra to date. But it's that old thing of reciprocity. You reached out. He said, thanks, but no thanks. Something fun came in your door. You sent it to him, again, with all the best intent. And there's something about us in all of us humans that we have to reciprocate. And so it was kind of his way of saying, hey, this is cool. This guy went the extra distance to get me on his show. He's obviously a great storyteller because look at this little fun story that I am now involved with Brian. So, yeah, what are you doing tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.? I'm ready for my interview. And I think you ended up staying up all night reading his books, didn't you, to get caught back up again?
Yeah, absolutely. He actually offered to do a video interview, and I said, no, Seth, just audio, because I had notes everywhere and all the rest of it, and that would have terrified
me. Oh, so, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's just a lot of fun. It really is. And Ryan Hanley, he does a he does a podcast called The Content Warfare, and he basically, his approach is he's made a big list of everybody he would like free consultancy from, and mm-hmm. that's who he reaches out for, you know, and he writes the questions down he'd like the answers to, and that's how he goes about it, which I also think is really smart, you know.
It's great. Brian is in L.A., because I think you were out there working with one of your clients this week, and now you're driving up to Malibu to meet one of my favorite people, Randy Olson, who has been on our show, Business of Podcast. I'm hoping you're going to go up to record him, or the Business of Story. I hope you're going up to record him because he's come out with that amazing new book, Houston, We Have a Narrative.
Yeah, I can't wait to meet him because, you know, anybody who can turn scientists into a good storyteller must be an absolute genius, or he must be crazy, one of the two. So I'm expecting to have a really good conversation, and it'll be a great episode for the show. So thanks for the introduction, Park.
Oh, absolutely. And what I love so much about Randy's story is here's this guy who's, you know, Harvard PhD, oceanographer, scientist. Then he goes to USC Film School, becomes a grad there. He goes into making documentaries and sustainability in the sciences, and now he's written his third book. And his whole mission in life and all of his brilliance is to get scientists to be able to connect with the regular folk out there through the power of story. And who is Randy's number one influence on this? Eric Cartman from South Park. So you'll have to ask him about that. Eric Cartman from South Park drives this PhD brilliant mind around story. I love it. It's fantastic.
I'll be sure to ask him about that. That's cool.
But I think that whole idea about the science of story, what I tell our folks too, is story is as critical to our survival as air is to our lungs, as food is to our survival. You know, we can go weeks without eating, we can go days without drinking water, but we can only go about 35 seconds without creating meaning out of something in our environment, and that's where stories come in. And it's this universal thing. I was in Washington, D.C. in 2011 and did this storytelling workshop for 3,800 executives from around the world, and it was translated in real time in 10 languages, and I didn't lose anybody in the crowd, and it's not because I was an amazing presenter, but I think the content of showing them how story works on all of us, and then they would get up and they would tell their stories, and it underscored to me this universal nature that we are all connected by the stories we tell and we share. And I would love to hear, do you think that there's a different approach over there in Europe than there is here in America, or what do you see? Because I know you work, you know, in both continents.
Yeah, I think I think you nailed it, Park. I think right at the center of it all, you know, we're hardwired to tell stories, and that's how we make sense of the world. You know, and if you can articulate a good story, you can achieve anything in marketing terms, really. So I think really the similarities and correlations, you know, are right there. I don't think there is too much difference. Maybe there's a difference in the application afterwards, but then you're just into the nuances of the audience again, and it's just knowing the audience, you know, the tone of voice and positioning of a story to resonate with who you're trying to communicate with. So yeah, I think underlying it's exactly the same, actually.
I agree. What do you, when you are working and coaching your clients in story, what are the biggest hurdles do you have to get them to overcome to open themselves to your process?
I think the number one is, we're not the hero? Are you kidding me? Really?
Right.
Yeah, and that's, it's funny, isn't it? Because you study storytelling for a while, and it's just obvious that no, your customer is the hero. It's their story. But actually, the number of times I've seen sort of magic happen by just explaining that one principle. But also, I think because as humans we're hardwired to sort of tell stories, when you pass over the basic tools so they can independently tell their own story with clarity, in a very concise, easy, simple way, the satisfaction of seeing, you know, the sheer delight of customers achieve that is just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the simplest things create the biggest differences, right? So mm-hmm. Seeing that transformation is absolutely fantastic. It's incredible.
Yeah, when we're doing this, I come across three kinds of customers, I guess, even within the same brand. You're going to have that typically older guy who's got his arms crossed and he's looking down his nose at you thinking that this is just a gimmick and there's no way in hell in his 35 years career are you going to convince him otherwise that story's going to make a difference inside and outside of his organization and brand. Then you've got, I suppose, that middle bell curve folks, where if you've got 10 people in the room, 6 of them are sitting in this area, and they're like, I'm intrigued. I'm not sure that I've completely bought into it, but, you know, I'm open, take me down this path. And usually when you do, you end up at the end of that storytelling path and you have devoted followers. I mean, they're like, wow, I don't completely get it, but I know there's something here that I have to dive deeply into. And then, of course, you've got those that immediately get it. And there might even be people that haven't really studied story or Joseph Campbell mythology or whatever. But for whatever reason, they are really in tune with their world and the journey they're on, and they can understand what you're talking about within the first 1 minute. I mean, it's just amazing. I had lunch earlier this week with an executive director of a very large foundation here in town, and she had heard about our process and sat down, and when I was taking her through the story cycle process, and I'm telling you, within 1 minute, she got it. And she was just completely engaged, and you're looking for ways to now to use that with her brand story and in her organization. So when I am in working with these brands and saying, you know, we've got to relook how you do this and kind of reinvent how you're going to market and telling your stories, that I want to first find that evangelist in the room and get that connection going, but then immediately get that bell curve group in the middle. And that typically takes, you know, I don't know, 20 minutes to a half hour into the presentation. And then you can bring the old guys along. But once the old guys start seeing what's happening around them, you see story start to really infect their lives. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it really is. And usually the value you're looking for out of the workshop, usually there's extra value that comes out as well. We always find. But we have these giant silhouettes of people in the room, and we use sticky notes, and we write down sort of, you know, from a persona and empathy mapping point of view. Yep. So when you get those, the old guys with the arms crossed, get them up writing on sticky notes and sticking them on and all the rest of it, get them on the feet, we find that that gets them engaged. But you are right. There's a period there where you have to convince them of the value, and you got to work hard in the first 20 minutes, I guess. But if you do get that, find the evangelist in the room, absolute magic happens. And we had a situation recently where we worked for a client, which I can't name. We had to go through 3 levels of security clearance just to go in there at their office and do this workshop. And it was actually, we were helping them with some recruitment. So we said, right, let's start off. We need to look at the personas. What's the position we're going to be recruiting for? And they said, we can't tell you that, Brian. We can't tell you that. Hmm. Right, okay, so what will they be doing? Yeah, we can't tell you that. We can't tell you that. Really? This is going to be tough. So we said, okay, give us some of the characteristics and the traits, you know, and some of the skills. Can you share anything about what they're going to be doing? No, we can't tell you that for security reasons. So it was really, really tough. So we spoke to this one guy in the room. We said, come on, somebody must have some stories or insights here, because we were faced with hiring 150 people for this one position that we weren't allowed to know what it was, and we weren't allowed to say who they were. So it's kind of like storytelling with duct tape over your mouth, or you know, with your arms like that. And finally, digging around, this one young kid put his hand up and says, well, I do tell this one story, and it kind of works. So everybody leans in, and this guy, he says, so when I'm talking to somebody, and he was a guy who speaks to prospective candidates to join this organization. And the other thing is, if you join this organization not knowing who it is or what you're going to do, you've got to wait 9 months to get security clearance to even find out. So it's a really difficult process, as you can understand. But he says to the candidate or the prospect, he says, when I was 5 or 6 years old, I used to play with an old computer, a Spectrum 264 or whatever it is. And the candidate would say, yeah, I used to do that. I had Amiga and this, that, and the other. Well, I used to write out codes from the back of the magazine and make my own games. Did you ever do that? Yeah, I used to do that as well. That's brilliant. And then I used to take computers apart and build them back up and make my own stuff. A candidate would say, yeah, oh, wow, yeah, I do that as well. because this is the type of sort of mentality of this persona. And they said, you know, when I got a little bit older, I started to make slightly more complex games and do this, that, and the other, and all the rest of it. And I used to, when I got to the type of age where I'd start to consider what I wanted to do with the rest of my life, you know, that question of, you know, what you want to be when you grow up. The job that I had in my mind's eye at the age of 16, I am now doing that job. So this guy tells that story. He really resonates and connects with the candidate and inspires them and sparks something off in their imagination and says, you know, we love games, we love coding, we love this, we love that. And when you were young, you know, when you, what was that job you wanted to do when you were growing up? I now do that job. And that's the story he tells to get people on board. And everybody was in the room was leaned in and was like, oh, my God, why have you never shared that story with anybody else in this room? And it was literally magic happened, and that sparked off the whole campaign and was the inspiration for how we hired 150 people to this this organization that we couldn't say who it was and what they were going to be doing. So the power of story is just incredible.
So, Brian, to wrap up here, what would be your top three tips to share with our listeners, the content marketers, brand raconteurs out there, business leaders, that they could use to start creating their stories?
Oh, that's a tough one to throw on me, Park, but I think the first one is subscribe to your podcast, definitely.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, second one's got to be buy our books and go through the process in there. But I guess if there was one additional thing there, it would be take the time to intimately understand and care about your audience. Really go through the idea of, you know, empathy mapping and connecting. Understand how they think, how they feel, how you can make your brand experience easy, and how you can make it memorable. You know, and if you just start off with those basics, you know, then you've got the foundation to move forward and start to craft a story that actually resonates and means something.
Brilliant. And I'm surprised I'm the first one to say brilliant because you say it often in your podcast.
That's right. So come on, Park, I've got to put you on the spot as well. What's your
brilliant.
Top?
Brilliant. Well, number one, absolutely, to tune into Getting Goosebumps and read the book. It's great, great, great stuff. No, really, I mean, you have top-notch guests on there, and you give really terrific content. And number two, I will agree with you, first and foremost, know your audience. And then I would challenge a business leader out there, while you're listening to our wonderful podcast and reading the information, first sit down and write your story. Why do you do what you do? And don't over-intellectualize it. Write it from your gut. Don't even give yourself a lot of time to do it. Give yourself an hour or less to write why you do what you do. Then set that aside, grab another glass of wine or beer. Then write your brand story in an hour or less from your gut. Don't over-intellectualize it. And then write your customer's story. And put those three stories together and see if you can find where the opportunities are to connect your shared values from what you individually share through your business with your customers and understand then the gaps in that relationship on either the purchase process, the follow-up, the customer service. There are always going to be gaps in that, but try to understand what that is. Both of our firms, PH Creative and Park & Company, we offer services in those areas across the pond. But that's what I found is when people get real with their own stuff, what they really stand for and what their brand stands for, then that whole customer story and interaction gets real. And I think that's where I would ask people to start.
Well, I think that's great advice and perfect place to end on there, Park. Brilliant.
All right. Brian, thank you so much for being a part of Business of Story, and thank you for inviting me to be a part of Getting Goosebumps. I mean, this has been a really cool interaction. And for everyone out there, we first met on Skype, I think, on Monday this week. So I'm looking forward to getting acquainted with you some point here in the not-too-distant future.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Park. It's been a pleasure, and I'll just continue to be a big fan of your show as well. So thanks for coming on Getting Goosebumps.
Oh, thank you very much, Brian. Have a great trip up to Malibu and say hello to Randy for me.
I'll be sure to do that. Thanks, Mark.
All right, take care.
So that's it for another week. I really hope you enjoyed that conversation. If you did, please feel free to subscribe or even check out our Getting Goosebumps marketing book available in Amazon. If you have any specific questions, you can also tweet us using the hashtag AskPH. I'd be delighted to answer your questions. Until next week, goodbye.